step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 432. I am Lisa Sheps. I am joined, as usual, by Nick Squared.
Nick Squared!
That's Nicole Shiro and Nick Mayo. You're listening to us on KOOP, HD1, HD3, Hornsby, and of course, we air this puppy live on KOOP.org. Remember, if it's theater, it's on Offstage and On the Air. Don't go away.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Yeah. Step right up.
It is Wednesday, September 27th, 2017. On the show today, we have Hyde Park Theater and their production of The Wolves. And hold on, let me make this a little quieter so you can hear me. And we also have the City Theater Concert Series and Omar Phoenix. And of course, we have to talk about Ground Floor Theater's production of Gibberish, mostly by Max Langert. And of course, we'll have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Chicago, Tripoli, and Quadrupoli. Stick with us. God, that took forever to end.
That was some staggered breathing.
That took forever to end. It's like I thought to myself, that's
well,
just going
to
time out perfectly.
Well, they kept trying to tell you posterity was just around the corner, but
it is.
The ending wasn't.
Not posterity, because posterity is around the corner. It's prosperity.
Sorry.
There's a subtle but distinct difference. I'm checking in with Nick Squared. How you guys doing?
Yay!
Yay! We are here. We are together. We are two Nicks.
Nicole's head feels better this week.
It feels better. You are here. You drink beer. Get used to it.
I guess so.
I don't know. I just made that up.
I love it.
Feel free to use it.
Woo!
I want to thank Kim Simpson for another wonderful International Folk Bazaar. It was folky, bizarre, and international.
And Puerto Rican. I just want to say, Ken Simpson, thank you for being someone who's bringing our consciousness, awareness, and conversations around to our neighbors, Puerto Rico, our fellow Americans who are struggling. And I really loved that your entire show was devoted to musicians from Puerto Rico, and I appreciate it. And yay on you.
Yay on you.
Good musicians to be celebrated from Puerto Rico.
Right. There's a lot to be celebrated in Puerto Rico, no matter what our current president says or does.
Or doesn't do.
Or doesn't do. Let's introduce the folks that are here with us in the studio. We have Ken Webster. Hi, Ken.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
We have Bridget Sievers.
Hello.
And that's the only ones. I don't know who's who now. Annika Lekvin.
That was very close. It's Annika Lekvin.
I just said that, but I said it. It took me three or four tries to do it.
You almost got it.
I did it. Maria Lachele.
Hi.
Got that one right because I wrote it out phonetically. And Adrian Collins.
Hello.
Easy to say. And then, of course, there's Omar Phoenix, who's not near a microphone but can yell out hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Okay, and Omar, if you want to chime in, you're welcome to come in and talk to Phoenix and talk to us. And Omar brought his companion animal here, whose name is
Bo.
Bo is a German Shepherd. It's very scary.
Bo is
she's very scary. Well, here's the deal. This doesn't really have anything to do with theater, although it's the theatricality of my mind.
Yeah, dun dun dun.
When I was little, at about age four, I was bitten by a German Shepherd. And for years, I was just afraid of big dogs. I mean, deathly afraid of big dogs. And now, whenever I see a German Shepherd, my stomach gets twists into little knots. But I know they're very nice.
Whenever I see a German cheesecake, my stomach twists into little knots.
I love German cheesecake. Well, we had some openings.
Sorry, Lisa.
No, it's good. That's a very... It's very apropos.
I don't even have anything to say.
Or as some people say, apropos.
Apropos. Should I say touchy instead of touche?
You should, and you should also say the glass meningery.
Yes.
Oh, and a streetcar named Desiree.
And Zui Loico de Cristal. All of the above. Okay, so let's talk about K-pop. Y'all, what? Did y'all see any of this stuff?
I'm excited.
Well, I saw the I saw
you
a little
sound
bit
like you're torn.
Torn?
You sound like you're torn.
I am torn because when you read about it, it sounds really exciting and good. When I watch the video, not so much for me.
Totally.
Yeah. So this is a performance piece called K-pop. It's done in two floors on a building in Hell's Kitchen. It's one of these things where you're escorted from room to room. The audience is divided into pairs by a wristband that you're given. And this is an Ars Nova production along with My Yi Theater Company and Woodshed Collective. It's like a big old production of production producers.
Production of production producers.
Yep. So this is it. So you are actually fed through different rooms of this K-pop. So I'm just going to read this entire paragraph, which sort of gives you an idea of what we're not sure it is. It's a satire. It's a soap opera. It's a deep dive into the conflicted heart of a divided land. It's a sweaty celebration of perky young talent and cold-eyed look at an industry that eats its stars for breakfast. It's a feel-good romp and a feel-bad psychodrama with detours into the shadowlands of xenophobia, racism, and child labor.
Yes. And for our listeners, which I love all of those things. No, I don't really. I'm being funny. But for our listeners who don't might not know, K-pop stands for Korean pop.
Correct.
Which is a crazy industry.
It's a crazy industry. And a lot of times it's done very much like the some of the groups that are manufactured that we have here, girl groups a lot. The stars are not treated well. Mm-hmm. They are, and the K-pop stars, I saw a documentary once, so you know it's
me
true.
Too.
I read this in Facebook, so you know it's true. But they're treated really poorly. They're not allowed to leave their hotels. They're mm-hmm. they're told what to do, where to do it, and when to do it. So
there's part a of long that, history of idol culture where they just get fed through this machine, and either you make it as an actress or you fall so far, and people turn on you in an instant.
Right.
And there's lots of, I mean, from an aesthetic standpoint, I love the kind of, I've never, you know, traveled to Korea, but I think it's a fascinating color explosion and
yep.
tactic explosion. So I could see how this could work very well in a two-story experiential piece and, you know, in a location place.
It sounds like an interesting piece. Just so you know, the way the rooms are divvied up, you're ushered through a series of meticulously imagined rehearsal spaces, recording studios, cosmetic analysis rooms, wow. And a theater cum bar. There is a bar there so you can drink while you go. So that's that. It is obviously a musical because it has to do with K-pop. The book is Jason Kim. The music and lyrics are by Helen Park and Max Vernon. Choreography by Jennifer Webb, and it's directed by Teddy Bergman. And it sounds actually pretty interesting. And the actors evidently work very, very hard. And of course, we're getting a slew of Asian actors, jobs.
Yeah. And I just to I think Ashley Park is in this, who it's been the year of Ashley Park with Sunday in the Park with George and this, and then she's going to be one of the mean girls in Mean Girls. So I'm happy for her that and people getting wonderful work.
I'm happy for her too.
Mean Girls, what about Mean Girls?
There's a musical of Mean Girls.
That's yeah. coming out.
Omar, you should listen to our show. You'd know about all about it.
I usually out with like 12 dogs during the day.
Okay. All right. We need to go on two other off-Broadway reviews that were interesting. Mary Jane came out. This is an Amy Herzog play, which sounds amazing. Has anybody read about it? Or
I just read the review this morning.
Yeah. Sounds great, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. Carrie Coon.
Carrie Coon, who I think a lot of people would know her from The Leftovers.
Mm-hmm.
But she also did a production of Twelfth Night, maybe? No, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? I always get those mixed up.
They're very similar.
That's hilarious.
So this is a New York Theater Workshop production, and it says it's a heartbreaker for any human. As a matter of fact, I was listening to a radio review of it, and they said that at the end of the show, they said, you know, some shows you watch, and at the end, you just jump up in thunderous applause. In this one, there was a full 10 seconds of silence. Mm-hmm. That was wow. Not silence like I don't know what to do, like silence I need to process this before I can react, before the applause came in, which I think is pretty cool.
It's a pretty, I've heard so many wonderful things about this, and it's a semi-autobiographical piece. Amy and her husband, Sam, who is Sam Gold, the director, both have a daughter with severe disabilities. And so this is kind of a cathartic piece for her to write about their daughter. And I hear that it's done beautifully.
Right. That's and the reviews will bear that out. And it's done in two acts. The first act is, it's interesting. There's four women actors that play different people in the different acts. And in the first act, the mother is, who is Mary Jane, is like a Pollyanna. She's very positive. Everything is good. She's dealing with this child. And she has people around her telling her, you really need to hit the realities of the situation. And she's going, no, life is beautiful. Life is wonderful. You never see the kid, by the way, but you hear the beeps from the hospital equipment. She says they turn his room into a pediatric ward. And then the second act has them in a hospital. And the set designer, I can't remember the set designer's name. I'm going to find out. But evidently, this is the set designer is the king or queen of sets shifting. And evidently, the set metamorphoses from the house to a hospital.
I'm really interested in this piece. I think she's a great playwright, and I think I'm excited to see it.
Yeah, and the reviews were all good for the most part. Directed by Ann Kaufman, with Lisa Colon Zayas, Carrie Coons, Danya Esperanza, Susan Purfar, and Brenda Wheel. Also another, so this is another really good example. This is like all women, so rock on. Mm-hmm. Girls rule. Yeah. That's it. The other review that I want to talk about is Clockwork Orange. I know, and I come from the era of the movie Clockwork Orange, and I never liked it. It's like I just never saw what everybody sees in it as genius, and many, many, many people much smarter than me think it's a genius work. Anybody else have an opinion one way or the other?
I've been a big fan of it for a long time, but I'm a big Kubrick fan.
Yeah, I love terrifying. Kubrick. I just don't. So I couldn't get past the violence. I didn't see the message behind the violence. What would you say?
Oh, sorry. I said I think it's terrifying.
Yeah, me too. Well, evidently the play itself is also terrifying, but yet not as much. This has been done before. Oh, sorry. I'm reading the wrong one.
But you're right. It was done at the Edinburgh Festival.
It was, but I was reading.
It was done at the O'Neill.
I was about to say it was done at the where'd it go? In Venice at the Ancient Jewish Ghetto. But I happen to know it wasn't.
I wish it was. That was kind of great.
The reviews were not so great. Although the New York Theater Guide didn't get a review from the New York Times that I could find.
Oh.
But the New York Theater Guide, Holly Harms, liked it a lot. The review from Helen Shaw at Time Out New York, I will read part of this. I'll read the whole thing. Right, this is just a blurb that's part of this. Right now, New World Stages, the risible British adaptation of Clockwork Orange is doing a bit of the old ultra-violence to its audience. Put synth-rock Beethoven on the PA, get some fit young men to do choreography that involves whipping off their tops, and you will probably please some people. But for those who do not hanker for Chippendale studs doing dance rapes, quick, we have a moratorium on. Can we have a moratorium on dance rapes? This orange is rancid and confused. Another sad example of an adaptation missing the point of its source material. So, not great reviews for Clockwork Orange. But it did open, and previously it was in London, right?
London,
merry old. It came over from across the pond.
One of those expensive transfers.
Yeah. So
there's a lot of those.
Let me look at my little list here. Let me look at the little clock here. First of all, Rent has been announced live. I mean, we've known about it at Fox, but I don't know why I put it on here. Fox is doing Rent in 2018 live. And Harry Potter and the Cursed Child.
You have to say it like this.
Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. I was telling somebody the other day, I've been doing bad English accents so bad, I can't do good ones anymore.
That's funny.
Harry Potter and a cursed child. So people will know that Harry Potter and the Cursed Child is a runaway hit in UK on the West End. It is done in two parts, so you actually have to see two-hour plays or three-hour plays to see the whole thing. You can't get tickets. Harder than Hamilton to get tickets to The Cursed Child. So it's coming here to Broadway. It starts previews in March, opens in April. Tickets go on sale on October 18th. But you have to register at Ticketmaster beforehand, starting on October 1st, to be able to get tickets, because they're doing that whole thing. You have to be ID'd before you can get your tickets.
And listen up, listeners. This is a different thing. There's no Daniel Radcliffe and Emma Watson in it. It's not. You're not going to see the book or the movies.
No Weasley brothers?
There's no Weasley brothers now.
I like the Weasley brothers. I like them a lot. So the other thing I want to talk about is, and I did this for, or I wrote it this way for Miss Nicole Shiro, The Artivism.
I saw that on the schedule that made me smile.
There's an article in Vox about how theater is becoming... Well, the title of the article is Why Theater is 2017's Most Politically Powerful Art Form. I don't know if I agree with a lot of what they say, what he says. I just made an assumption. Oh, wait, I have a word. I got to go back to this word, but I'll do it later. We'll talk about this first. But they talk about... the cast of Hamilton, who talked to Mike Pence when he was there. They talk about the Julius Caesar in the park and a lot of the other things that in theater that has been spurred by our current political process. And I should say before we start this conversation that the opinions expressed here on Offstage and on the Air are not necessarily the opinions of the staff producers, the staff board of directors, or anybody at Co-op Radio Station. These are simply our opinions of our people on the show here. But they're talking about how much art and theater in particular has a way of hitting people much more viscerally than any other art form, and therefore makes a bigger message. I see a lot of nods going on here. Annika, what? Tell me about that nod.
Oh, I was just thinking that I've always thought that theater has been more like politically geared. I've always thought that since I was a little kid. Yeah. So I agree with you.
Well, and it always has been politically geared. The interesting thing is what this article is saying, since we've always been reticent to be too vocal because we've not had permission to be too vocal. But in the current political climate where permission has been granted to be as vocal as you want, and you're not worried about losing your audience because, you know, when you're trying to sell tickets in your commercial theater, you want to sell tickets. So you've got to sort of dumb everything down. People don't feel that way anymore, which I think is very, very interesting. We saw this week all your sports people, your NFL people, all took
goodness.
A knee.
Yes.
And Miss Saigon took a knee. Oh. Did you hear that?
Yeah. I did. That made me very happy.
And what works really well on radio here is I'm offstage and on the air is going to take a knee.
Are you gonna get up?
Yep. I don't know if I take it up. Offstage on the air is taking a knee. Okay, that's it.
And up.
That works really good. That will do really good for the podcast, for the video cast.
I honestly think I hurt myself.
Old lady.
But what's interesting about this is that, you know, the whole idea of the racism in this country that has come to a boil, and it's come to a point where it's okay to be verbally racist.
Well, the
here.
Thing is that people are using...
Find a microphone there.
Well, the thing is that people are using patriotism as a mask for racism.
Yes.
They're saying that if somebody doesn't stand for the national anthem, that they're not a patriot. But what I've been telling people, and I mean, I'm seeing... I turned my personal social media into an echo chamber a long time ago, because I believe firmly that we can't be good allies to one another and those who really need our voices if we're too busy trying to change the minds of people who are stuck in their own past.
Correct.
Or people whose consciousness of us are stuck in their past idea of who we were. So as we choose to evolve and we move forward, there people are not used to that. So then what's happening is that people they keep bringing up people who served, and soldiers, men and women, who I applaud the fact that they sacrificed so we could have these freedoms, but our Black American brothers and sisters are losing their own lives on American soil.
Right.
And to bad cops, and not all cops are bad.
Right.
Hello, listeners. Just at this point, there is an emergency alert test, which covered about 2 minutes of our show. So you're not hearing the part that we said right now. And now we'll pick up where we left off. See ya.
In the city of Berlin. So this is a theater called the, and forgive me, Germans, Volksbund Theater.
They drive really well.
They do.
They drive really well.
It was established in 1890 as a theater for the working class. And now it's had a shift in management, and it is seen more as a shift towards more commercial theater. And so a group of people took it over. With the permission of the old guard. Hmm. And they said they could still let this new person produce their plays, but they are going to hold on to it and run it more as a collective.
Wow. I love that.
Yeah,
I
me too.
That.
Yeah,
that makes
cool.
me happy.
So folks can see that was in the New York Times, and folks can see it. There will be a link on our site.
Can I just touch on something about artivism that really stands out to me? And this is happening a lot more and more.
Please.
With whether it's Broadway performers or artists or playwrights or movie stars or whoever it is, being so accessible via social media, that words and actions and teardowns or opinions can be communicated directly to them. There's been a lot of hubbub in a lot of ways. You know, the West Side Story is celebrating an anniversary.
Yes, it is.
And the timing of that being, Puerto Rico being damaged, and people, artists have thrown out photos on social media about their portrayals of certain characters, including like a beautiful soprano sending out a thing saying what an honor it was to sing this score with the San Francisco Symphony, and then she was attacked. Because she was not, she was singing the role of Maria, and she was not a Latina, and was just attacked via social media. And it's Alexandra Silber who wrote mm-hmm. after Anna Tefka, who is a Jewish woman and whose mother is Latina. So she said, though my name is Alexandra Silber, which is Jewish, my mother's maiden name is Noriega. And so, yes, I did sing Maria with the San Francisco Symphony, and all of this hatred and things.
But I also think there's a difference between somebody singing something in a concert and casting someone in a role that is culturally inappropriate.
But it's just one of those things where all of our responsibilities, and I'm guilty of it, we're all guilty of it on some point, is when we speak without being informed. When we type, or we respond, or we like or dislike, I just ask us, with this proximity and with this wonderful ability to easily connect, comes even more of a responsibility to know what we're connecting about.
Absolutely. So, thank you.
I love that stuff.
That was well said. Yeah. Artivism.
Very well said. So now we'll end this little section with a word that came from we didn't even talk about this. That's why I missed it. There was also, we won't really get it off Broadway. I find it interesting when Ben Brantley, a major critic of the New York Times, reviews something that was done, they're calling it off Broadway, but it was actually in Montclair, New Jersey at Montclair State College. It was a production of Merchant of Venice with very interesting. The director is, oh my God, what's her name? Karen Coonrod. And she does a lot of experimental stuff. Shylock is played by 5 different people.
Ooh.
Very interesting.
Interesting.
I won't, and it was indeed first stage last year in Venice at the ancient Jewish ghetto. but I will say this, we're just going into the word, and we talk about words that critics use that you need a dictionary for. So I'm going to say the sentence, and y'all tell me what this word means in context. They and their sybaritic buddies smug in their social insularity. Sybaritic. And I may not be pronouncing it right.
How do you spell it?
Wait. Sybaritic.
Sybaritic.
It's spelled S-Y-B-A-R-I-T-I-C. Anybody?
I thought it was going to be a C. Mm-mm.
All right, yeah, me either. It means loving luxury. Hey. Why couldn't they just say that?
Sybaritic.
Sybaritic. All right, so we're going to take a little break and come back, and we're going to talk to Hyde Park Theater and their production of The Wolves. We're going to play a little piece from Rent because they're coming here, and I like Rent, so there. Would you like my cat? We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nick Squared.
Nick Squared!
That's Nicole Shiro and Nick Mayo. We have been talking to Ken Webster, Adrian Collins, Maria Lechele, Annika Lekven, and Bridget Sievers, as well as Omar Phoenix. Now we're going to switch gears and talk specifically to Hyde Park Theater and their show, The Wolves. Ken, tell me about this show.
It is a wonderful play by Sarah Delop. It's the first play written by Sarah Delop. And in her first attempt at writing a play, she was a Pulitzer Prize finalist.
Wow.
Yes.
She's not a winner. She's not a. I can't do Trump. I was going to go into Trump, but I can't do him.
It's about a team of high school girls who are on an indoor soccer team.
We call it football.
Yes. They're one of the characters calls it football. She's from somewhere else, and it takes place during before their games over several weeks. And it's really beautifully crafted and a really wonderful script that's funny and serious and a great opportunity for actresses. Nine actresses play the team, the Wolves, and there's a soccer mom played by Rebecca Robinson.
Oh my gosh, of course.
RR.
We love RR. Oh. Well, great. I can't wait to talk about it. We're going to take a little side thing here because I forgot to do this right at the top. Annika, before we started, I asked you to choose a number between 2 and 52. What did you choose?
I chose 13.
Okay, let's see what that is.
Hello, I'm Leroy Reams, and you are listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP Hornsby Austin, 91.7 FM.
Leroy Reams. Okay. Nicole's just saying we always get him.
I love me some 42nd Street and some Leroy Reams. I'm just like, it doesn't matter what number. He pops in every time.
So what I found interesting about this, I didn't find it interesting. So do these characters have names or is it just numbers?
It's funny you should mention that. In the program, they're listed by their numbers.
Okay.
I'm not going to give you a spoiler, but yes, in the program,
it's just numbers.
They're all numbers.
So as we were as people were coming into the studio, I'd say, "Who are you?" And they go, "I'm 13." I go, "No, I need your name." So can we go through the actresses here and I'm sorry, I don't gender actors. So the actors here and say however you want to describe your character and. A little bit about your character.
Yeah, of course. Hi, I'm Adrian Collins. I play number 14.
I love number 14.
Number 14 is so much better than 13.
Much
it's like
better.
One more. Is 13 here? Uh-oh.
13 is right here. Don't
talk
we have
Kenzie.
A 13, but she's
talk, say something about 14. What's 14?
14 is 14 and number 7. I should have Maria introduce herself as well.
Hi, I'm Maria. I am playing number 7 in The Wolves.
We play best friends.
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I wish there was a video camera for that right now. That was kind of super adorbs.
Yeah.
And you did look best friends.
We're not the nicest girls on the team.
Uh-oh. Yeah. You're the mean girls, as we were talking about
definitely
earlier.
Definitely the mean girls.
Yeah, I feel like one of the challenging things about playing these characters has been finding moments for them to look empathetic and to express empathy, because they definitely do, upon first glance, look like the mean girls.
Yeah. But Sarah Delop has given us plenty of opportunities to find those little moments.
Yeah.
It's really fun.
It's great.
Awesome. And Annika, who do you play?
I play 00. She is the goalkeeper for the team. She doesn't talk a lot. She gets a lot of performance anxiety. But she's a great character, and I love her a lot.
And I should say Bridget Severs is here, who is a co-op family member here. Do you want to tell folks what show that you are participating in here on co-op?
I got two shows. I'm one of the circle of DJs that does Around the Town Sounds on Thursdays. And then I'm also the able assistant on Bangers and Mush on Fridays. And those are both from 12 to 1.
Yeah. Okay. So now that we got that out of the way.
Other show promo. I play number 25. She is the team captain.
Oh, tough.
I know. I get to be the boss.
So as I'm listening to you guys, it sounds like there's many of us went to high school and know about cliques and things like this. I'm sensing a little bit of clickiness that we're experiencing here.
Yeah, within the play, yeah. We've had conversations like asking, like, what character were you in high school?
Yeah.
And because there's so many different personalities in this play, it's so fun to think back on our time.
Yeah.
Our number 11 isn't here, but everyone's always like, yeah, I'm a little bit of a number 11. Yeah.
What is that?
What's high achieving?
She's the high achieving, very like, I like to watch documentaries and I look up weird stuff on the internet kind of kid.
I think the character description says budding intellectual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you put all of these 9 pack members together, right, where does the conflict come into play other than, obviously, are you not playing another team? It's you're all on one team or are there two separate teams? Talk a bit about the conflict in the piece.
Well, the conflict is between the team members. So it's between the girls. It's exploring their relationships and how they evolve as people. And I guess the different dynamics that young girls face, especially when they're competitive and all high achieving girls too. And it's really cool because I was on a cross-country team in high school, and I find a lot of parallels between that team and the team that I'm, I guess, playing with as part of the Wolves. Yeah, yeah.
And is there an overarching message that we're getting here without spoiling the show? Is it that can't we all just get along, or is it where people?
I love
people?
That everyone just went into deep thought about that. Like everyone stopped and was like, "Hmm."
Oh, it's a great character study of these 9 totally different young women,
right?
There are some cliques within the group, and some people are kind of disrespectful of the team captain. You're not the boss.
Bridget, I'm sorry.
Most people are disrespectful of the team captain.
But the amazing thing is the players on the team, they all really love each other, and this cast has just been so wonderful, and they became fast friends from the first read through. And they really are a team.
Right. So you are the artistic director of Hyde Park Theater. You're also the director of this piece. Was there anything special challenges with this piece? 9 characters on your stage. You don't have the biggest stage in the world, so that's a lot of people in your space as well.
Yes, and they play soccer. They do warm-ups and they do some soccer.
So are you suggesting people should wear helmets if they come see the show?
Oh, no, it's perfectly
shin
safe,
guards.
I'm a big sports fan, but I don't know a lot about soccer, so I brought in Robbie Polgar,
who's a
director and actor and writer and former youth soccer coach.
Oh, there you go.
And he came in and did some work, some
soccer. Did a little choreography.
And some of the girls have played more soccer than others. But Robbie did a really great job of, and it's been mentioned in reviews how good their soccer skills are.
I love it.
Where
does the play take place, and in what time era?
It does not say in the script, but there's a bunch of clues that would lead one to believe that it takes place in Reno, Nevada.
Oh,
but it's anywhere USA.
I was going to guess the Northeast because I don't know why, but I was going to go. I thought you were going to say the Northeast. I almost tried to say it for you.
It all takes place in the City Sports Dome, where they play their games, and each
the
scene,
CSD.
Yeah, yeah. Each scene is them prior or post game. So you don't actually get to see an entire game, which would be problematic on our small stage.
Is it done in one act, or are we 2 acts?
Like a lot of these modern playwrights, it runs about 89 minutes without intermission.
Awesome.
And it flies by.
We like that. I'm a big fan.
I was like, oh, that's the
I'm a big fan. It's not good for concession sales.
It is not.
I will tell you that. but
or mini bladders.
Yes. Yeah.
But I do appreciate that. And you're just going into your second week?
Yes.
How have things been going so far?
I
have a thumbs up for Monica.
Oh, yes. The crowd response has been tremendous. We got a great review in the Statesman online. I don't think it's hit print yet. And we've got some other reviews outstanding. We haven't heard yet, but the audience response has been really, really great. People seem to really dig this play, whether they're sports fans or not sports fans, or teenagers or grown people.
It sounds
fantastic. Wonderful. Yeah.
You've been excited about this one for a while. Yeah,
I am excited about it. And I just hate that I have to say this, Ken, but also thank you as an artistic director for choosing piece by women about women.
Yep.
Well, for 2017, all three
I hate
plays,
that I have to say that.
Oh, well, thank you. For 2017, every one of the three plays we picked for our season are by female playwrights. We did John by Annie Baker,
right.
And The Moors by Jen Silverman, and this is the third of our three.
Great. Well, we always love having you guys on. I want to thank you for coming. Where? How long do you play? When do you close?
We close on October 21st.
And where can folks go to get more information?
You can get more information at hydeparktheater.org.
Wonderful. Well, thank you guys for coming in. Hopefully some of you can stick around and go backstage with us. And best of luck with the rest of the run.
Thank you so much.
That was Adrian Collins, Maria Lachelet, Bridget Sievers, and Annika Lechthen, as well as Ken Webster. They were here talking about Hyde Park Theater's The Wolves by Sarah Delop through October 21st. For more information, you may visit hydeparktheater.org. We'll be right back.
Come on, don't you want a little taste?
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps and Nick Squared.
Nick Squared!
We just got finished talking to Adrian Collins, Maria Lachelet, Annika Lechthen, and Bridget Sievers, as well as Ken Webster. We have Omar Phoenix waiting in the wings. But first, we're going to talk a little bit about local stuff. Y'all ready?
So ready.
So ready. Well, as usual, we are running late. But I want to start by talking about a new theater company that is opening up. It's called the Filigree Company, the Filigree Theater. It's opening with a production of Betrayal on the 28th of this month. And this is another theater company that is doing works by and for women. The co-founders are Elizabeth Newman and Stephanie Moore, and they're very excited for the new company. I'm excited to have them here.
Yay.
Yeah.
And that show runs September 28th through October 8th at the Santa Cruz Theater. Let's see where we can get more information.
I think it's Betrayal ATX or something.
Sure, Betrayal ATX. I think that if you Googled Betrayal ATX, it's filigreetheater.com. FILIGREETHEATRE.com. So go onto the website. You may go onto their website and look at their stuff. And we're going to try to get them on the show in the coming months just to talk about this new theater company and what they're looking to achieve and how they plan to support Austin Arts.
Welcome.
Yay. and I have to talk about the final week of Gibberish Mostly at Ground Floor Theater. We had our first weekend last weekend. It was really well received, very well received. And we're only playing 2 weeks, so we only have one more weekend for folks to get to see it. And I'm enjoying just sitting and watching it. Saturday night show is so much fun to just sit and watch.
Lisa, what does it feel like to see people in your space?
Oh my God, Nick, it is so great. That space has been sitting empty for 20 months, and to have people back in, and it was like putting on an old pair of shoes.
It was a great story on you in the Chronicle.
Yep.
It's nice to have you back in there.
You know, we're thrilled to be back. We're starting to book other people in. We have some incredible plans for 2018, and we're just so happy.
It's a really great space. You were so kind to invite me to come and play with you guys for a little bit. It is a really, really great space, and I'm glad that you're back and open.
And those people that knew about Ground Floor Theater before are going to be very impressed to see what's happened in the development itself. It's a much more...
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's a much more art-friendly scene there. We actually have marked parking spaces in the parking lot. And as proven this week, we have a new roof that does not leak. So that's that took 5 years. So let's go into Today in Theater History. Anyway, for more information about Gibberish Mostly, groundfloortheater.org. We play Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights at 8. And I just state my opinion. I liked it. I especially liked the choreography.
I'm seeing it on I'm seeing it on Thursday, and I'm very, very excited.
So, 1898. You remember this. It's the birthday of Vincent Yeomans.
Yo, man.
Yo.
Do y'all know who he is?
I feel like I should, but he has a different name.
Nope, doesn't have a different name. I didn't know who he was either, but he wrote the score for No, No, Nanette, Two Girls in Blue and Hit the Deck, and Wildflower. He's, and of course, with No, No, Nanette, T for Two is one of his famous. I'd never heard his name before, so that's why I'm talking about him. 1942, show on this day, this is a loving day. In 1942, we had two major marriages. One by Jessica Tandy and Hume Crone. and then they're, I guess they're most known for the Gin Game, I think, but they're known for so many other things as well. And then, also the marriage anniversary of Stella Adler and Harold Clurman. Amazing. Stella Adler and Harold Clurman may not be known by a lot of people outside the theater world, but Stella Adler is a tremendously well-known, or was, theater teacher. Well-known for teaching method, amongst other things.
I had a teacher who studied under her, and she had a speech impediment, and she loved to say, "Ooh, when I was studying with Stella Adler."
Stella Adler!
Stella!
This is also, and we were talking about this the other day, we talked about Singing in the Rain, which is opening up at Zach very soon. It's in previews now. And many of our co-op family went to see Singing in the Rain and have said wonderful things about it. They'll be on our show next week. or the week after. I forgot.
Next week, right? It's the 4th? Yes, because it's already October coming up. Yeah.
But this is the death anniversary in 2003 of Donald O'Connor, who famously sang Make 'Em Laugh. Amongst other things. And this I totally didn't remember. In 2004, at the Kodak Theater in Los Angeles, a show called The Ten Commandments, The Spectacle Musical.
Oh, I do remember this.
I do not. And guess who was Moses? Do you remember who was Moses?
I don't remember, but this is why I remembered it all. I was like, this is like the gift that keeps on giving when I read the,
Anyway, it was Val Kilmer.
Thank you. Oh. Yes, see?
I would have loved that.
Also, in 2015, talking about Ground Floor Theater, I had tickets to closing night of this show, but I had to cancel it because the theater was having trouble. And as it turns out, I wouldn't have been able to make it anyway because there was a blizzard. And that's Def West's production of Spring Awakening, which I'm so sorry I didn't get to see. But a friend of mine, I sent him the ticket. He went to see it and said it was wonderful. So there you go. Birthdays.
Wait, we missed a good, really good Today in Theater History.
This was Today in Theater History.
Yeah, but you missed one.
We'll do it quickly.
Well, it's 100 years old. The Broadhurst Theater is 100 years old today.
Yeah, it wasn't in my book.
That's what I'm saying. Shame on you.
Shame on Playbill. That's where I get this stuff from.
That's what I meant. Not you.
Anyway, birthdays. Jane Meadows, Arthur Penn, Meatloaf. Oh.
Meatloaf. Well, he does have a musical.
Locally, he does.
Bad out of hell.
Locally, Scott Shipman. And Joe Maraschino. And if you don't know Joe, she's teaches over at the Institution Theater.
That's awesome.
On Friday, Megan Thornton, Kirk Miller, and Gray Randolph.
Wow, that's some birthdays.
There you go, some birthdays. Bon anniversaire. Okay, and from No, 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 Net. Here we go, because I like this song. I want to be happy. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa Sheps. And Nick Squared.
Nick Squared!
That's Nicole Shiro and Nick Mayo, or Nick Mayo and Nicole Shiro.
That's why.
Oh, wait, your microphone wasn't on.
You didn't understand. We're two Nicks.
Because we're neck and neck.
So we're happy to have in the studio once again Omar Phoenix. Hi, Omar.
Hi.
How are you? It is so good to see you again.
You are all right.
And you brought Bo with you, so that's all. It's always nice to have a four-legged friend here in the studio.
Yes,
oh, you know what? There's a reason why I haven't been able to hear you, because your microphone wasn't on. So you have to repeat all
Shazam.
Of that stuff.
Shazam.
Hi. So, Omar, you're going to be performing your incredible music over
at
the
City Theater.
Yeah. So tell us about this. This is new.
This show's different. So January 7th and 8th, or 6th and 7th, earlier this year, my band and I were there. It was the first time I'd played really
in
anywhere.
In a while, yeah.
In 5.5 years. And I've been working on a new record called Bird of Paradise. It's not supposed to be out until next spring, between spring and summer. But I was really inspired this past summer, being able to take certain steps forward and just really love life. And so I've been working on new music, and a lot of which will be performed in this show. Got some new stuff, but this show is more more of a spectacle rather than just a music concert, because I've got my band, but this time I'm accompanied by my dancers as
well. Oh, awesome. So there's dancing this time.
Yeah,
so
cool.
There's some YouTubes of you, and so you can get an idea of what's amazing about Omar is he's an incredible... I'll just talk about you in the third person like you're not here.
Don't talk about me like I'm not here.
An incredible performer, but he sings and plays violin. And it's pretty amazing. I love you. You don't think of violin as a kind of instrument that people, that
as
vocalists,
a show instrument.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yet you do quite a good job doing that.
Thank you.
But once upon a time, because we knew each other years ago as well, I did not know you as a singer. I knew you only as a musical performer.
Yeah.
So did you make a switch, or were you always doing it this way and I just didn't know it?
I've been singing longer than I've been playing. I've been singing since I was 4. I played the Cowardly Lion in The Wiz, and I played...
Where'd you do The Wiz?
In Atlanta, in 07. But I also played a circus lion when I was in third grade. I mean, I've
got
been
this thing about
you only
lions.
Play lions.
Yes.
I was just about to go, are you
a
Leo?
Yeah, I'm a predator. No, I'm an Aries.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. But I've always been a performer, and I started playing violin when I saw Yanni live at the Acropolis in 94. I think I was a freshman in high school. He had a violinist named Karen Briggs performing with him. She's actually a wonderful friend and mentor now. And when I saw that, I was like, wow, I want to do that too.
Did you say you saw Yanni live at the Acropolis?
Yeah, I didn't see it there, but I saw it on PBS.
Okay.
Thank you, Public Broadcasting.
Okay, okay. But yes, I know what you're talking about. I was like, wait, you were at that?
Yeah, so,
because...
But I saw the show.
I love
what
Yanni.
I find amazing that Yanni inspired you to do all this.
Well, I don't know.
I'm not the biggest fan of
Yanni. The interesting thing about him is that a lot of people think of him as like this Candles New Age thing, but when you see his show, he's got a 45-person rock orchestra with him, and then these amazing singers, and then these very talented jazz fusion musicians and world musicians that turn otherwise kind of
Yanni
keyboard songs into like a spectacle.
That's how I felt, and my mother dragged me to a show, and I was like, oh my
god, why am I doing this?
And then when I saw it, I was like, okay, that was a totally different Yanni. And I
I was in ninth grade when I saw that. But I've always been a performer. I was a gymnast, I was a cheerleader, I did musical theater, I was a singer, I was a dancer, and so I'm actually really excited to bring this show to City Theater this time, because I feel now that this is an even more genuine representation of who I have always been as an artist, but also as a human being.
Awesome. So we're going to play a little piece of music
that
you sent along. We're not going to be able to hear the whole thing because we still need to have time to talk.
The Pink Flamingo.
But yeah, so do you need to tell anybody about that? Do we want to set it up in any way, or just let it play?
Well, I just feel like right now, like where we are, not just as a nation, but in the world, there's just so much of a black and white situation where I think that people need to stop being and if it's going to be that way, then we need to stop being afraid of showing our true colors as human beings, as allies, as LGBT people, as black people, as Muslims, as Latinos, as whatever. And so the Pink Flamingo, even though I wrote the song inspired just by being out on the trail with my dogs because I'm a dog walker, but it's when you get in sync with life and who you are, you just feel alive. And it's like kind of like whenever you're watching, you know, when you're out and like when you see pink flamingos and you see them and they just seem so poised, but then they fly and then it's just so beautiful. And it's just kind of all tied together for me.
Well, great. Well,
I love being in nature. So, yeah.
Great. Let's listen to a little bit of Pink Flamingos by Omar Phoenix. Okay, that is beautiful. It's playing in the background right now. Tell folks where the dates of the performance and how they can get information.
This Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, nightly, 8 p.m. at City Theater, 3823 Airport Boulevard.
Wow, the address and everything.
And you can call 512-524-2870 to purchase tickets.
Great, and the website is citytheateraustin.org. Omar, thank you so much for being on the show.
I love you guys. Thank you so much for having Bo Beans and I here.
Bo Beans. We love Bo Beans.
She's a good girl.
She is. That was Omar Phoenix. His concert will be part of the City Theater Concert Series at the City Theater from the 29th of this month to October 1st, both at 8 o'clock. For more information, citytheateraustin.org. We will be right back. I sort of just want to keep this music playing underneath.
I was just about to say, can we keep this on? Because I'm like, we needed the video camera
it's nice.
Again.
Well, guys, we did it again. Another hour of Offstage and On the Air.
I know. That was quick.
It always goes by so quick. I'm always worried that we're not going to have enough, and we always have too much.
So true.
But
too true.
I could never get enough of you guys.
Our cups runneth over.
Harry Potter, the musical. Where your cup runneth over.
It runs over. Thank you guys. Remember, folks, we are on Facebook. We are on the Twitter. We want you to get the podcast, the podcast, because you'll get to hear things like Backstage at Offstage and other things like that. And we can also curse a little bit.
Yes, we can. It's all hog wild for a while there.
Yep. So how do they get that? What are some of the ways?
Well, you just go to offstageonair.com. Just enter your little
email address
in the box and what happens?
Send it right there.
Whoop, you arrive.
We just show up in your mailbox.
You also can get us on iTunes. So Austin Monitor News is next, followed by, I keep calling it the Library Show, but I know there's another name for it. But it's the Library Show as far as I'm concerned.
I had the name of it. Now you said Library Show and put that back in my head.
It's the Library Show. And I was very late in getting everything together today, so that's why I'm playing the next song. But everybody stick around for Backstage at Offstage. It's next. We weren't backstage last week, so we want to be backstage this week.
Yes.
Thank you, guys. I love you.
Love you, too.
Love you.
A girl who finds she's not a looker may well decide to be a hooker. A living, even homely.
Okay, the curtain has just come down on Sibilance, the musical. The story of a lonely sound engineer from the Broadway stage who cannot seem to get the mics work properly no matter what he does. That's it. That's the whole musical. Well, here we are. We've
he's silent. The mics don't work.
The show is over. The mics do not work here. We have left the backstage. We're downstairs. We're standing here in puddles of unnamed liquids by the dumpsters backstage of the theater. And we have here with us Adrian Collins.
Hello.
We have Maria Lachelet.
Hi.
We have Bridget Sievers.
Hello.
And that's it. Okay, thank you for being on the show. See you later.
Bye.
No.
Bye.
Bridget, I want to start with you because you're co-op family.
Yeah.
So that's why we're going to start with you. How did you get interested in theater? When did that start?
Age like 5 or 6.
Age 5? Are you from Canada?
No. Okay. California/Washington originally.
Okay, well that's close enough.
Yeah, close enough. West Coast, it's all British Columbia.
Yeah. BC.
No, my mom.
But BC's not Canada, BC. So you guys all just ruined your theory.
British Columbia is not Canada?
It is Canada, but it's not really Canada from the rest of Canada. BC is, it's like Austin's not really Texas kind
yeah.
of thing.
Austin,
BC
yeah.
is its own entity from the whole rest of the country.
All right. Okay.
Vancouver is Los Angeles, you know?
Yeah, so no, it's not. Night
no, but
and day.
They use it as the Los Angeles backdrop for
Vancouver's
movies.
Awesome.
Yeah. My mom was in going back to college when I was very little, and I would go with her. She was getting a liberal arts degree, and she had to go see plays and go to museums, and so I would go to theater productions with her, and I fell in love with theater.
You fell in love, and what was your first show?
That I was in?
Yep.
Midsummer Night's Dream in 5th grade.
Do you remember the first show you saw?
Oh, gosh.
We'll put that out for everybody. What was the first show you saw?
The first show I remember seeing that was very impactful was actually done at my school by the same teacher I had for 5th grade. He did Shakespeare every year with his class. I mean, obviously
with
very condensed.
With 5th graders?
Yes.
Oi.
And it was Hamlet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
One of the light ones.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Cried like a baby when Laertes died, you know.
Well, who doesn't?
I don't remember the first show that I saw, but I have a very vivid memory of seeing a performance of Kiss Me, Kate when I was in elementary school at the Shreveport Opera. And I will never forget seeing that show. It was like, oh, this is different. You know?
What about it was so memorable for you?
I mean, it was a really high-quality production, for mm-hmm. one thing, in this huge venue, and I don't think that I had been exposed to anything like that before, I'm not sure that I had seen a live musical either,
uh-huh.
It was pretty great.
I'm from Dallas, and when
Texas
I was,
or the other one?
Yeah, Dallas,
okay,
Texas.
Just want to make sure.
And my mom would take me and my sister to the Dallas Summer Musicals.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And then she also took us to, like, Dallas Children's Theater and stuff. I think the first production I remember seeing was, like, a staged production of If You Give a Mouse a Cookie, which mm-hmm. was my favorite.
That's
children's
a Pulitzer
story.
Prize winner,
like,
isn't it?
Yeah, it's a children's book. You just
yeah.
threw me
oh,
back.
I've never heard of it.
It was my favorite children's book, too. And the memorable part about it was that there's a part where one of the characters, like, pulls out a drawer, and the drawer broke, and it, like, came out all the way. And, as a kid, I didn't know if that was supposed to happen or not, but the actor just covered so quickly, and I was like, that wasn't supposed to happen. And I was like, that seems so much fun to be able to act and react and improvise and stuff. Yeah.
Cool. Nicole, what was your first play or show?
Peter Pan.
Oh, that's how we've had that conversation.
We had this conversation.
I don't remember. You know, I don't remember anything. For me, it was
Peter Pan. Man, Peter Pan. Peter Pan is everything. If you didn't know that.
I grew up watching
Margaret.
Oh, yeah, on PBS video. You taped it on
Mary
the VHS,
Martin.
And then I watched that
Mary
VHS
Martin
until it broke.
Is a Texan. That Mary Martin.
She's my hero.
She is. Bridget, then what was your first play? The first play you were in was what again?
Midsummer Night's Dream.
Midsummer Night's Dream. Who did you play?
Titania.
And do you musicals as well?
I do, yeah. I'm not in as many musicals, and I really like the parts where I get to get, like, all the praise, but I don't have to do any of the singing. I get to be, like, the comic relief character.
Oh, that's more fun.
So
anyway.
Those are really fun.
And what brought you to Austin?
I started by working here. I moved from the Seattle area to Chattanooga. Then I moved from Chattanooga to here. And
all makes sense. That's exactly the way I
do it. Yeah, that's exactly the way everybody does it. Yeah, it's just popping all over the United States. But yeah, it's...
What were you doing in Chattanooga?
Working. I was living with my grandparents. There's not too much theater in Chattanooga, and mm-hmm. trying to make it into Atlanta is like...
But no, there isn't a lot of theater, but it's a cool city.
It's a
my
really
cousin
cool
went
city.
To school there, and I enjoyed visiting, but I did that. I was like, they had arts, I'd live here, but...
If you go literally you go. 2 hours north, you get to Knoxville. They have so much theater. There's like 4 theaters, 2 Shakespeare companies. They just cram it all in next to
but
the college.
Chattanooga has the shortest pedestrian bridge and the Chattanooga Choo Choo.
And
so
the Chattanooga
Choo Choo. Come on now.
I know about the Chattanooga Choo Choo, but why on earth would you know about the shortest pedestrian bridge?
It's because I have nice useless information in my head.
You certainly
and it's
do.
Also random home facts. To Rock City, yep. Which I don't know. I haven't seen the show, but it's in the book of American Gods.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So then you decided just to move to Austin from Chattanooga?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I do that a lot. I move around a lot.
And did you, I know you found the radio scene here. Did you find the theater scene at the same time? Was that concurrent?
Yeah, I'd say pretty concurrent. Theater probably a little bit after radio, still on that grind. The radio, it's like, oh, do you wanna? Because you can just come in. Theater, you kind of have to...
Yeah, we're sort of an insular group here.
Elbow your way in.
You can do it. It sounds like you're in
we're
with Hyde Park.
Yeah.
And you would have been perfect to audition for Gibberish Mostly. But you're being
be
a wolf.
Two places at one wolf. Time.
You couldn't be in two places at one time. That's a shame. Maria, where are you from? Wait, Baton Rouge. No, Shreveport.
Shreveport, yes. Yeah.
And bring
How
that microphone
you know
closer.
That?
I am from Shreveport, Louisiana. Yep. I went to school at a little private liberal arts women's university in Roanoke, Virginia. I moved back
Named
to Shreveport.
Called?
Hollins University.
Oh, I love that.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, we used to vacation there as a family.
Oh, really?
No.
Oh, I was like, oh, okay. I mean, I know people who
Yeah,
do,
there was but... always these things happening on the island, and you were like, whatever.
It's an island?
No.
Roanoke is the famous lost colony.
The lost colony. Oh, but
lost
this
colony,
is a different
yes.
Roanoke.
Oh.
But I do get that joke a lot.
Roanoke. Yeah.
A lot.
Sorry.
I majored in theater. I was a double major in theater and history. And I moved back to Shreveport after sort of being unsuccessful at finding an acting job my senior year. And then about a month into being in Shreveport, I started commuting to Dallas and Austin to do auditions.
Uh-huh.
And I landed.
It's an easy commute.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And I was like, this is just not going to work. I can't drive all the time. So I moved to Austin, where my sister was living at the time.
Uh-huh.
She got her PhD at UT, and I joined her here and immediately started doing theater stuff. And I've done odd jobs and theater things ever since.
Awesome. Well, and awesome. What was the bug that fed your theater? How did you find yourself loving theater?
So I grew up mostly singing and doing music. I played viola. I was a classical violist when I was growing up.
Viola.
That is cool.
Yeah. And so that's when
do
I was
you still
growing
play?
Up. I do.
Good.
When I was growing up, that's kind of what I was more focused on. And then when I was in high school, I went to a performing arts schools like all through elementary through high school. And when I was in high school, my senior year, the Caddo Magnet Players were doing a production of The Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum.
Oh, and, with cats?
With cats.
The Cat-O-Matic Theater Company?
Oh,
come on.
It's Caddo Magnet, like
know,
the
I
Caddo
looked,
Parish.
I just wanted to live
yeah,
with
no,
cats.
Pretend that cats were doing
Caddo. There's a lot of cats walking around Italy.
Yeah.
Lots of stray cats.
There is a theater company in New Orleans who did a production of Cats with actual cats.
It was probably good.
I think it's called String Horse or something like that. Anyway, I auditioned for Forum and I got cast as Philia. And based on the fact that I could sing and not the fact that I could act. And then from then on, I just was really addicted to it. I loved it.
So do you do a lot of musicals here in town?
I did a lot of musicals when I was in college,
uh-huh.
and but I didn't get the opportunity to do a lot of Shakespeare. So when I graduated from school, I was like, I'm going to do Shakespeare now because okay. I love that.
Right.
So I've done a lot of classical theater, and now I'm starting to do more contemporary theater. But I have not done a musical since 9 to 5 in 2013.
Well, that would take it away from me too, by the way. It's like, I'm done. I am done. So
why
any
would
desire
you
to get back
that
to
that about 9 to 5?
I've not seen it, so I can't really.
It's a cute musical.
It's a good musical.
It was a lot of fun.
And it's Dolly Parton.
I know, darling.
Please.
I got to play the Jane Fonda character. Ooh. It was really, really fun. But yeah, I'm not really a triple threat. I don't really dance well. I'm an actor who moves well. And I had gotten to the point by the end of my college career where I could learn choreography pretty decently. But now I'm at a place where I can't do that anymore. So as far as a desire to get back into musicals, I don't know.
Well, I was also in that boat in the show that I did that eventually came to Broadway. I was hired as a stage manager, but they needed a body on stage. So then I was thrown into the chorus. And one day the director came to me and said, I need you to be in the opening number. Just go out. This was, we were in previews at the Kennedy Center and during a rehearsal. And he said, just go out there and fake your way through it. And so it's the Kennedy Center, I think, is a 2,000 seat house, and it's dress rehearsal, so there's like a handful of people in the audience, and when the whole thing ends in a big button, and when the button happened, and all I see is darkness, it just howls of laughter coming from because I can't dance. No. That's all there was. I know, it was very, very sad.
Upsetting.
And my friend Dean, to the day he died, just continued to tell that story. He thought that was the funniest thing in the world.
Well, you're just continuing on the legacy for him of telling that story.
Yeah, I know. I've told it here before. Adrian, what's your story? You grew up in Dallas?
Yes, I grew up in Dallas.
The one in Texas, to be clear.
Yes.
Yes.
That Dallas. That's the right one.
Yeah.
I actually go to UT, and I am
right
a
now.
Theater major.
Oh,
yep.
Awesome.
I'm in my fourth and final year, so getting ready to graduate.
Yay, mazel tov. Yeah. And what are you going to do once you graduate?
It's up in the air right now. I'm still trying to figure out where I'll end up.
I vote for New York.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Right? I've been thinking a lot about it lately. I spent this past summer in Los Angeles,
mm-hmm.
and it was my first time out there, and I really loved it a lot more than
I thought
I would.
They do actually really good theater. I've seen a lot of really good theater in L.A., although it's a smaller market for theater, and if that's your interest, and so therefore more competition.
Yeah.
But I've seen some really, really wonderful theater there.
Mm-hmm.
And so you grew up in Dallas, and what sparked your interest in theater? Where did that?
So I have, it's sort of a funny story. When I was a kid, I used to play indoor soccer, and I was the goalie. And this was like...
Wait, aren't you a goalie in the Wolves?
No, I'm not, but I've...
She's a midfielder.
I thought you were double
Ott.
You're double Ott.
No, double Ott left.
Annika was a double Ott. Yeah. I knew it was going to happen. So.
Yeah, but this was when I was like 7 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And my team was really good, so that meant the ball never came to my side of the field. So I was just alone in the goal for the majority of every game. So I would just kind of make up stories and talk to myself in my goal on my own. And my dad would come down and like check in on me. All the parents would like be watching the game and they'll look over at me and I'm like, oh, in my own world.
God the ball never came to you.
Right. Yeah. And then when it did, I got all freaked out and scared. So I think that's why my parents put me in theater camp. When I was
young. I've been listening. So I listen to a lot of theater podcasts, and one of the podcasts I listen to is sponsored by, I forgot the name of the theater camp, Musical Chairs, I think, maybe. I don't know. Mm. But this wasn't on my radar when I was growing up, and I wish it was.
Really?
Theater camp. That would have been nice.
Yeah, I had Space Camp in my vision, and I never
space
got
camp
there.
Would have been good too.
But
we're
Lisa and I are going to go do it as adults. I was just
so you went to theater camp?
I did.
In Texas?
Yeah, I went to the KD... the Kim Dawson Conservatory. Uh-huh. They have like little kids camps. My first show was Into the Woods Junior.
Oh, no. Oh, that's hilarious.
Who did you play?
I was the evil stepmother.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I was really tiny. I was like one of the youngest ones, but I learned a lot. I learned like stage left and stage right at an early age. So
that's,
yeah.
Those are
and then I did
things.
I did musicals with them every summer and like sometimes during the school year. And then when I got to high school, I stepped back from musicals a bit and have been just focused on awesome plays.
And I don't really know how the School of Theater and Dance works at UT, but do you focus on, is there a musical program versus a acting program? And I did air quotes with that. Because I think musical performers are also actors.
Yeah, UT is sort of going through a transitional period right now with
about to say that.
Yeah, all of their programs. So it's kind of all up in the air. I'm an acting focus, but I'm doing a BA major, so I'm getting like a full, well-rounded education in theater.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. God, there was something I was gonna do with everybody, and now I can't. Oh no, it's for extra credit. So you mentioned you learned stage right and stage left. So do you know why we say upstage and downstage?
Yes.
Anybody else?
Yep. I did not get a proper theater education. I kind of just cobbled it together, but I'd love to learn.
Okay. So Adrian, why don't you school us?
Maria probably knows the specifics, but I just know that back in the day, like the very first stages.
Oh, right. When the stage was raked. Yeah, stage was raked.
So yeah.
All raked,
and,
yeah.
And the audience was all on
top of the rake, bottom of the rake.
Yeah. Yep.
So that's up and down stage. So here you are, you're standing in a theater and you need to indicate the floor or the roof. How do you say those in theater speak? See, this grid. Is for extra credit.
The grid or the deck?
The
grid.
To the grid, to the deck.
I was trying
to. There you go.
I too got a well-rounded MBA.
Awesome. You could. I must say, you're probably the first of my students to actually get that. So, therefore, you all pass. Well, I'm so thrilled that you all came here backstage. Maria, I do have a question for you. You're not doing musicals now, but if you were to do one, or if you had a favorite song from a musical that you wanted to sing, what would it be?
And sing it now.
And sing it now.
I really like Assassins by Stephen Sondheim.
Yeah.
And I my second major was in history, so I'm a huge nerd for
any particular song from Assassins?
I mean, Everybody's Got the Right is great, which is just sort of the general theme.
Everybody knows that one.
But I Am Going to the Lordy, which is Gateau's song. I just love Gateau. I just love that character and learning about him.
So actually, wait, just
figure.
A second.
I am going
to
we can hear it right now. Is that amazing?
That's
awesome.
Wow.
I am going to the Lordy. That's great. That's great. Well, thank you, guys. Thank you once again for joining us here. And best of luck with the rest of the run on The Wolves. Roar!
I do
have to say, everybody, go see Gibberish Mostly at Ground Floor Theater Thursday, Friday, Saturday night. Tickets, pay what you want. We can mention prices here.
Oh, yes, we can.
So, and we can compel people to do it. So do it. Go see Ground Floor Theater Gibberish Mostly. And The Wolves at Hyde Park Theater.
Yes. Running through October 21st.
Yeah, so start this week with Ground Floor. Next week, go to The Wolves. Or Friday night, go see Ground Floor. Saturday night, go see The Wolves. You know, there's lots of choices.
Fill your life with theater.
Right. Bye, everybody.
Get off your backside.
I'm going to the Lordy.
This is your golden opportunity. You are the lightning and your news. Wait till you see tomorrow. Tomorrow you won't be ignored. You could be pardoned. You could be president.